Welcome to Radio Free South Africa with your host, Skalk van der Merwe, and myself, Karen Smith. We will have a surprise guest for you in the second hour, but we have an awful lot to talk about as things in South Africa are extremely busy at the moment, and we'd like to give you an update before we bring in any other guests. So, hi, Skalk.
Hi, Karen. Yeah, my guess, I'm still alive and everything is still going this side. How are you, my dear?
It's fine except freezing cold. Other than that, I'm very worried about the situation in South Africa. And I think the first thing we should talk about is load shedding, because that might well strike you today.
I just have a lot of feedback, sorry. I think there is a chance that we could have load shedding later on, but at this point in time, it's very stable. In fact, they have just gone to stage two load shedding, which is it's actually quite stable. We're not going to have severe load shedding. Load shedding is basically electricity blackouts for now. For now, meaning the next few hours from where we are at this point. But yes, Karen, that has been the big issue in South Africa. There's two or three big issues in South Africa this last week, but that has certainly been the biggest issue. Load shedding, basically what's going on is that Eskom, it is the monopoly state-owned power utility in South Africa, many decades old, a tremendously big, strong company, but it has been run into the ground by the ANC government for the last 15, 20 years. They simply can't produce enough electricity to keep the grid alive. Now, there's various reasons and various theories why this is happening. Doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that they are producing about half the capacity that they are supposed to. And that causes a tremendous strain on the grid, to the effect that they have controlled blackouts now. We call it load shedding in South Africa, where certain areas, certain grids are just simply shut down for an hour, 2 hours at a time. It's very controlled, very up to date. If it's 8 o'clock in your area, 8 o'clock, the lights go off. So it's very controlled, but yes, we're sitting with this tremendous issue of so-called load shedding in South Africa.
And I believe, Skalk, that they're going to go from stage 6 to stage 8, which could give you 4.5 hours twice a day that you're off.
Yeah, the theories and the scarecrows and the bully boys on social media and so forth has been running up and down with this story now for approximately the last 3 days. And it's really scary, because if we go from what we had yesterday's stage 6, which is very severe, it's about 2 hours, three times a day that you then cut off from the grid. If you go on to stage 8, it's about half of the day, and it can even be more than half of the day. But there's a very practical problem on this from an engineering standpoint, and that is simply if you down the grid in areas to that extent, there's a possibility of just simply blacking out the whole grid. And if that happens, well, we're going to sit with no electricity until such time as we can actually have enough power supply to get the whole thing up and running again. So I don't foresee that we will ever reach stage 8. I'm going to discuss a little bit later on why I think, because the crisis that's being thrown at us is a crisis, but it's not as big as it's reported to be. But yes, yesterday we were sitting on stage 6, and social media was speaking about stage 8. I can't remember that Eskom ever themselves said that they will go to stage 8, but yes, it was indeed a possibility. They spoke about the issue that previously they only planned onto a stage 4, where you basically would lose about 2 or 3 hours a day per grid, or 4 hours a day per grid in your area. And then they even planned up to a stage 6 and a stage 8. But they didn't come from their side to say, but we will reach that. But yes, there was a possibility, or there was a lot of talking about the possibility of going to that stage.
Wow, Skalk. So I would like to talk about the effect on business and on people, because as you yourself have said, I always bring the human factor into it. So the effect on business is shocking. And we'll talk later about the mines closing down and due to strikes, et cetera, et cetera. But right now, how do you run a business with hours and hours and hours of no electricity? Yes, you can have a backup generator, but, you know, petrol and diesel are very, very expensive in South Africa. So how does your business run?
It doesn't run. It doesn't run. And I can speak from many years of experience relating to this, because I was involved in still involved in organized business. In South Africa, we have chambers of business and guilds and so forth, quite organized, actually, and organized to a national level. I was the provincial chairperson, as well as a president of one of the big chambers for many years. I was on the presidential of the South African Chamber of Commerce and Industry. So when I speak about these things, I don't just simply speak from what I read myself in the media. I know these things firsthand. It has a tremendous effect on business for the very simple reason, as I said, the double in your business, you can't produce. The factory stands still, the bakery can't bake, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the main issue here. But you must remember that, once again, this is engineering, the engineering side of it all. If you start to shut down your machinery inside your factory, it takes some time to get them back online again, and often it causes malfunctions and even fires and so forth, actual damage to those machinery. So it's not uncommon for a factory to start up again, come on.
Oh dear, this is the kind of thing that I was worried about. It's just going to be an ongoing problem. I think that Skalk is going to come and go, but he will come back. From my point of view, the problem of load shedding for Skalk, you disappear.
Speaking of the mines, today in our Karen, can you hear me?
I guess I can now, Skalk. You disappeared for a moment there.
Okay, no, it's fine. I was speaking about the mines. The big diamond mines, being Petra. Petra is it's basically only second in size to the Beers group. The Beers basically running the whole show, and Petra being the second largest in the world. They themselves, the Amplats, that's Anglo American Platinum, Implats, that's Impala Platinum. It's all of these that I'm speaking about. It's big major mining groups. It's not a little mine in a central area or a specific area. It's mining groups that's with quite substantial holdings across South Africa. So it's Amplats, it's Implats, and then the Harmony Group, that's gold mining, and the Sibanye Group, which is huge. Sibanye is the biggest private employer in South Africa. That is how big they are. They all shut down all their operations, both underground, the mining, and above ground, the milling part of the operations. They simply shut it down today. They only running ventilation and draining of the water inside the mines now. For the very simple reason, they can't send their people to go and work underground, and even in the milling section, because the milling section itself is also a very dangerous place to work, because you can be in the middle of your operations, or in the middle of being sent down in the cages, that the lift into the mine, and the next moment it's the load shedding, it's the blackout, and then you're going to sit there for 2 hours without electricity. So they simply can't send their people underground. And yes, they came out formally today. These big mining groups, we're speaking of tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of people, if you even go to the contractors who supply the mines, affected here. It's huge. They went out, or they came out today formally to say that we're shutting down our operations until such time as we have surety from Eskom that they can supply electricity constantly. So it's tremendous. It's tremendously big. So we're not only speaking of the mining operation itself. Usually around mining and big industry, you have all these suppliers and contractors, etc., ancillary types of business. So supporting the whole thing. So those people are also affected. So it's a huge, huge, tremendous knock-on effect into the economy. And yes, we literally at that point in time. It's not people scaring us anymore. It's now big business saying we simply can't jeopardize the lives of our people and sending them on shift again.
Yeah, Skulk, but as I understand it, and this is all just gleaned from social media, so I could well be wrong, but as I understand it, we are still supplying electricity to Zimbabwe and Zambia at the same time. So, you know, while South Africa goes dark, do those countries still have power? I don't know.
Currently, we supply, and I can list the countries that we supply. We supply Lesotho being a very small country in South Africa. It's basically landlocked within the borders of South Africa, so we supply them. The old Swaziland, I can never remember their new name, but the old Swaziland. We supply a huge part of the power to Botswana. We supply most of the power to Namibia, a little bit to Angola. Then we supply most of the electricity of Zambia. They have a little bit that they produce themselves, but it mostly comes from South Africa. Zimbabwe, of course, and we even supply a huge chunk of the power supply into Mozambique. At some point in time, I know that there was a supply up to as far as Tanzania in central southern Africa or central Africa. But okay, let's leave Tanzania out. I'm not sure about that. But basically, the whole southern African subcontinent, never mind only the country of South Africa, even our neighboring countries are reliant on Eskom. Because it was, at its heyday, it was the power supply company in the world, not even in South Africa, in the world. We won numerous awards overseas over the years for the excellence of our power supply, etc. So obviously we also supply to them. And those contracts are still standing. And yes, we are supplying those areas, but they do not have blackouts. They don't have load shedding. So it's obvious that Eskom is not targeting, but they feel less for their South African core business than for these countries across our borders. Those people are not experiencing the problems that we have.
There you go. Because places like, I was looking at the load shedding schedule that was posted yesterday. And what is really offensive about all of it is that places like Soweto do not have load shedding. And yet, they are the ones who own billions and really billions with a B to Eskom in unpaid services.
Yes, that's a fact. And let me explain to you how this works, because there's two levels of power supply into municipal areas at this point in time. The first one is there's direct supply from Eskom. So in other words, an area like Soweto, that's the southwestern townships, it's basically a huge sprawling black township, black residential area to the south of Johannesburg, southwest of Johannesburg. That is exactly where it is. If you drive there, you drive and drive and drive and drive for how many kilometers, and it's just a sprawling area of residential areas, and now these days also businesses, etc. in that. And it's a black area. But in those areas, Eskom supply directly. Their grid is their own, and they supply directly to those consumers. Now, we know those consumers are not paying Eskom, and it's not a conspiracy theory. It's actually a very contentious issue in South Africa, where Soweto is owing billions of rands to Eskom, but it is not paid, and the power is also not cut off. But I will come back to that in a moment. So that's the first type of supply. Usually also in the rural areas, to the farming areas, etc. The farmers usually buy their power supply directly from Eskom. But then you have a second one, and that is where Eskom sells this electricity to the municipalities. And the municipalities, as middlemen, then resell it onto the customers ourselves. Also taking a huge chunk of profit on top of that. You must remember that. There's also income that the municipalities gain from the supply of electricity. Now, what people who don't know these things, they look at this grid, this load shedding grid, and they won't understand why certain areas are not cut and why certain areas are cut. It's those areas that municipalities supply to consumers, AI, the white areas. because those are the paying areas. It's those areas that are load shedded. The areas that buy directly from Eskom are not load shedded. Now, it doesn't make sense. It's these contradictions in South Africa that will never make sense. So in other words, you're paying well-behaved customer, their power supply is cut, but you're non-paying, abstaining type of customer, they have constant supply of electricity. So yes, your observation is quite right. There's certain areas that are load shedded, and mostly white suburban areas, they are load shedded, whereas huge sprawling areas where mostly black people live, they are not being load shedded. That's a fact.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It really is ridiculous, Skalk, that the people who are stealing electricity, literally, because the townships and the squatter camps, you've seen, everybody must have seen the pictures of the wires leading off the electricity poles illegally to their shacks. So, you know, those people don't lose power, but the people who pay, they are the ones who are losing the power. And now they want another huge increase in price for not supply.
Exactly. Now, Karen, that is where I wanted to come to, because you're actually saying exactly what the layperson observer now himself start to realize. And you're sitting in the United States, you know, don't know about all these politics on the ground level. So even you as a person in a foreign country can start seeing where this is going. Every single year you have these rolling blackouts. Every single year. And in the same time, Eskom will come out and they will say, but we want this increase and that increase, etc. That must go to another body called NERSA, the National Energy Regulating Forum of South Africa, and they must approve or disapprove it. Now, always leading up to this process, you have this issue of load shedding, and then Eskom will come out and say, but we need more money because we are hamstrung, we don't have sufficient funding, and that is why we're asking for the increases. And if we can't get the increases, all these rolling blackouts, these load sheddings, it will simply continue for years and years and years and years and years. And then every year, NERSA also grants them these ridiculous increases. Now, look at the strategy. They go after the paying areas in load shedding. So in other words, it's demoralizing those customers to a point where they say to NERSA, just give Eskom the increase. It's fine. We will pay more for electricity, but at least put them in a situation where they don't cut it anymore. So it's a bullying tactic, to my opinion. I've seen it many times during my time in organized business, where they simply bully people, bully businesses into paying for their ridiculous tariffs. So yes, that is basically what's going on. Why can't they cut an area like Soweto? Because if you cut Soweto tonight, tomorrow morning, 3 million black people will rise up and flow in into Johannesburg, and you will have civil war. It's as simple as that. That's why they can't cut areas like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely, Skalk, because they know that the people who pay are law-abiding people, and they're not going to strike or burn things down. And that's another thing. A lot of the substations have been burned. I saw that as well. And one wonders, what is the absolute plan of this? Because we all know that this is a time of year where you go affirmative shopping for Christmas. You break into more houses, you rob more people in the street, and all of those horrible things that happen. And every South African knows that you have to be careful all year. But this time of year, you must be even more careful. So the blackouts just work to the advantage of the tsotsis, who are the street crooks in South Africa. They're called tsotsis. It works for them because now your electric gate doesn't work, your alarm system doesn't work, your phone doesn't work, your cell phone doesn't work, nothing works. So breaking in is very easy at this time of year with load shedding.
Yes, that's a fact. It makes the work of the criminal, and I don't only call it criminals, I call it terrorists. It makes their life so much easier. For all the factors that you indicated, yeah. Yes, it's not only power supply. We will get to the issue of water supply in a moment. It's not only power supply that's a problem, but simple communications. If the grid goes down, obviously the cell phone towers can't charge. They also run on batteries. We know those things. So they have backup batteries inside those big pylons, those big, what you call it, aerials. Let's call it the aerial. So if the power goes down, those batteries can run for a certain time, but then they are also depleted and they have to be recharged. Now, if you have these rolling blackouts every 3 hours, every 4 hours, you have certain a certain amount of blackout, and usually it's about 2 hours. Gradually, those batteries become depleted. So I struggle. That is why I told you this morning there's a possibility that I can't even go on air because there's simply no data flow. There's simply no bandwidth. There's simply no signal coming through because in our area and most other areas those batteries have been depleted. So if the electricity goes down, there's simply no signal running. So yes, just think for yourself if you want to call 911 in the United States and you pick up your phone and there's nothing, it's dead. Just think how scary that is to a person. And those are the things that we have a daily occurrence of. The farmers in the outlying areas, everybody knows about farm attacks and farm murders. What do those farmers do if they do not have basic communication? Yes, you can go on CB, civil band radio. Yes, they usually have those networks, but it's only effective to a certain point. So what do you do if you don't even have those communications?
That's what I was going to say, Scott, because my parents are now dead, but when they were on the farm in Zanin, they had ham radios so that they could call their neighbors and everybody checked in on everybody on the hour sort of thing. So it was their security system. But if you're without power and that goes down, then you're done for. And don't tell me that the Tutsis and the terrorists don't know that.
Yes, of course they know that because many of them come out of the military, from a military background. Many of them were members of the Defense Force. Many of them are and were members of the police services. So, of course, they know these things. And they know how vulnerable these communities and these isolated farms and so forth are. They know these things. So, yes, it increases the risk to these communities and farmers and so forth. It increases it tremendously. That's a fact.
Yeah, it's very scary to me, Skulk, because as I said before, this is affirmative shopping time anyway, and this is just going to make it a great deal worse. So I think we should go on to the water supply thing now, because the electricity supply affects that as well. So not only do you not have power, but you don't have water either.
Yes, yes. And the two are interlinked. It's not by chance that it's like this now. Okay, let's put the context again in South Africa for many years. We went to the government and we told them, you will have to up your supply from water. So Africa is a dry country, but yes, we also have huge supplies of rain and fresh water running into the oceans. You've seen the flooding now, for instance, in Gauteng. Very ironically, the eastern part, the northern part of the country is being flooded. So we have ample water if we manage the water correctly. And we've been telling and speaking to government for many years to tell them, but you will have to really up your game here because at some point we're just simply not going to be able to meet the supply. As simple as that. Then we're sitting on a dilapidated and supply system of water in even most of it, much of it, the previous regime, the national body regime. So that, for instance, only in the area that I live, we use about 30% of fresh water.
That's the area
that we use. Now, what's the correlation between power supply? Yes, Colin?
Skulk, we're losing you. You're coming in and out.
Okay. How is it now?
That's much better, I think. No, you've gone again, Skulk. Sorry, guys. This is just the way. And of course, as we're talking about the load shedding thing, it just affects everything. And life must be unbearable in South Africa right now. You don't have power. You don't have water. You don't have security. You don't have telephone. You don't have your freezer. One of the things that I have been reading from friends is that when you can afford to have food in your freezer, it's now going rotten. So not only do you not have power, but you're going to run out of food as well. Because if you're off for 4.5 hours, your freezer's done for. Especially now, it's summer in South Africa, high summer, and it is extremely hot. People have been telling me how terribly, terribly hot it is for such a time of year. So on top of everything else, your hoarded, carefully stored food goes off. And people are struggling and suffering. It is the most ridiculous situation. I have no idea how they're going to solve it because the president, Ramaphosa, went to Egypt on a visit in the middle of all of this chaos. Apparently he's come back today or is coming back today to address the problem. But what does he think he's going to do? Run the power stations on human gas? I don't know. I really don't know what the answer is. Are you back, Skulk?
I hope I'm back and you hear me, Karen.
Yes, I can hear you perfectly now.
Excellent.
Yeah, I was just talking about human cost.
Yes, and I wanted to elaborate on an issue of water supply, because in the first instance you need water electricity to purify the water, of course. So you pump it out of with electricity, you pump it out of a borehole or the river or wherever you get the water from, the source of water, and then you must purify it. So electricity is involved in that process. Then you need another process where you pump the water into reservoirs, and those reservoirs then, through gravity, put the amount of water into the supply grid, into the towns and cities and so forth. And all this is run basically on electrical pumping, etc. So if the grid goes down, there's no pumping of water into supply. And at some point, you will run out of fresh water. I'm sitting in the northwestern Free State. We ran out of water yesterday. Now, fortunately, most of us have our own boreholes here, so we can pump out of the boreholes. But in the big cities where you have 10 or 20 million people clustered together in Gauteng, for instance, it's impossible. So if they do not get supply from the municipalities, they don't have a water supply. And at some point in time, we will get to that stage where even water is then affected, and we won't have a supply.
Yeah, exactly, Skulk. I mean, you've just gone through a horrific drought, as we discussed in the previous program, where feed and water was delivered to the farmers. And now suddenly everything is flooded, everything. It's shocking to see whole towns underwater. So you are being hit with an avalanche of problems right now.
Yes, but Con, that's also man-made. It's also man-made because if the stormwater system in a city is up to standard, remember, these things don't happen by chance. You have a city planner and you have your engineers and your water engineers and all these experts planning these things, and they were planned. We're sitting with some of the most advanced planning in cities and towns in the world under the old apartheid government, the old nationalist party government. But they are also not being maintained. And therefore, you have all these floodings because the stormwater system of all the cities has become dilapidated. You don't have offflow of those water. So if it can't go into the stormwater system, where is it going to go? It's going to go into the residential areas. And that is where the flooding comes from. It's not incidental that you're seeing this. South Africa is used to heavy summer rains every summer. It's supposed to be like that. So yes, that it's once again, it's a man-made issue. It's a man-made crisis that you're seeing.
Yeah. And so from there, I'd like to move on to the job situation, where they've brought Cubans in at huge, huge, huge expense. Instead of re-employing the whites that ran the country successfully, they'd rather bring in Cubans who don't speak the language, don't understand the culture, but are brought in. For instance, that bunch of mechanics that were brought in to fix the army, the defense forces vehicles, well, what a mess up that turned out to be. So can we talk about that as well?
Yes. No, that's a fact. That's a fact. Through affirmative, so-called affirmative action, we call it employment equity in South Africa. There's nothing equitable about the system. It simply means that you take whites out of the system and you replace them with black people simply on the color of their skin. It has nothing to do with capabilities. It has nothing to do with competencies. It's just simply race-based. Because of that, over the last 20 years, all the knowledge and the expertise flowed out of big business and the state-owned enterprises in South Africa. And they have been replaced by black people. And this is not a racist thing. This is a simple skill issue, a competency issue. They have been replaced by people from color that do not have those skills. In many instances, catered from the ANC, just simply getting the job because they are a member of the ANC and they know somebody in the party, whatever, and that is why they receive the position that they are in. So obviously they can't run these huge. And remember, South Africa is a hugely developed economy. It was a first world country to the standards of Europe and the United States. They can't run it. As simple as this. Now, not wanting to hire back the white experts into the system because their own policies now prohibits this. If you're white, you can't get a job in the state service. Now they go overseas to Cuba of all places and China, but Cuba of all places. And there they go and recruit people from there, doctors and engineers and all these things. Why? Why on earth? I mean, Cuba is not Germany. You understand what I'm saying? If Cuba was the center of excellence of engineering in the world, that would have made sense. But it's not. It's not. I mean, they run old cars that's 60, 40, and 50 years old, and they have their own dilapidated systems there. How can they come to South Africa and now come and fix our problems if they don't even understand that to begin with? So, yes, we're also sitting with issues like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So, Skulk, we have about 20 minutes or so before the ads. I would really like to talk about the new Boerebach people.
Oh, yeah. You mean Mr. Harry? What is Harry's surname now? I can't remember. The Crusaders, the Christian Crusaders.
Okay. Yes. Before we say that, you're going to have to talk a little about the Boerebach so people can understand where we're coming from.
Yes. Just after the dawn of the so-called democracy in South Africa, we had an incident that was called the Boeremag, which simply means the Boere or farmers, but Boere force incident, in which the government went and they arrested a huge number of so-called right-wingers at that point in time. And the allegations against these people were that they were trying to overthrow the state and they were planning terrorism. And yes, there were incidents of bombings and violence, but I will get to that in a moment. So they went and they basically arrested a whole bunch of people relating to that. And those trials, the Boeremag trials, lasted for years upon years upon years, and most of those people were found guilty. And they received very hefty sentences, prison sentences. On the grounds that they are now this right-wing conspiracy trying to take over the new democratic state. That was the narrative being built around it. The incidents of violence that took place, we know now, not as conspiracy, but as fact, it's in court documents, We know now were police operations, where they simply enticed people to go out and plant bombs and do silly things. We know it was police. It was national intelligence that caused those things to happen. But many of these people were stupid enough, and I say it what it is, they were stupid enough to fall for these things from national intelligence, and they did partake in this all. So that was the Boeremag at that point in time. Some of those guys are still sitting in prison, and it's very clear that they're not going to get out. They can't even go to the state of the appeal court in South Africa for many reasons. Very recently, they even went back to the High Court in South Africa, which is lower than the appeals court. And they once again approached the court and said, but everything that happened here was done incorrectly. You must review your own process. If you don't want to send us to appeals court, you must review your own process. And the court wasn't even willing to do that. So those people are sitting. Okay. About 6 months ago, one of these small little right-wing clusters or groups, whatever, they have these little WhatsApp groups and little Facebook groups and so forth. And there was a gentleman by the name of Harry Knussen, himself then calling himself a general or supreme commander or whatever, some strange title. And he was then the general, the supreme commander of an organization called the Christian Resistance Movement of South Africa or something to that effect. And he became very well known amongst right-wingers. By myself also, I know about all these things, because he made these videos on open Facebook in which he threatened that he's going to overthrow the government now. And he's planning this bomb and that bomb and this act of terrorism and that act of terrorism, of course not calling itself terrorism, but how he will fight against the system and literally fight against the government. And everybody was looking at the other person and saying, but what is this guy's game? What is he busy with? You can't say these things in South Africa. They're going to come and arrest you. And yeah, it escalated to a point where not myself, not the National Conservative Party, not the sane and rational people, because we distanced ourselves from this months ago. But where some of these other Boer groups then went so far the last, let's say, a month, in which they said, but the police must go and arrest Harry now, because Harry is causing all this trouble and it's going to cause everybody to become involved in this, and it's going to be like a Boeremag again. And yes, the police actually went to Hawks, the Hawks being a specialist unit of the police, criminal, organized criminal, the part of the police that investigate organized crime and so forth. And they went and they arrested Harry Knussen, and I think three other people were arrested with him. So yes, this is now this tremendous right-wing conspiracy, which is actually not even close to that. I mean, you saw the so-called ones that were found in the possession of these people. It's like an old 1911 Model 70 pistol, and it's smoke grenades and things like that. You can't even fight against the government with that. So one of two things happened here. Either it's a total false flag operation by the state itself to basically now lure in all the other right-wingers and cause them to be scared or arrested or whatever. So it's either this false flag, or it's just simply a total nutcase in the person of Mr. Harry Knussen going out and saying stupid things and being arrested. It's one of the two things. That's my view. That's my opinion of what happened here.
Yeah, absolutely, Skulk. I saw your post saying that you don't want to comment on this because people are making a huge big thing of it. But the problem there is, once more, we have a small group of really, really, really far right-wingers causing trouble for all the rest of the people who are working very hard to legally distance themselves from the South African government. So, you know, it is ridiculous. We have spoken many times about the people who damage the cause of the real activists, the real workers. And it's a small band of people who have caused an enormous uproar and are no doubt going to cause other people to be pulled into this conspiracy. I think we've lost Skulk again. Well,
yes, of course, Carl.
Oh, yes. Okay, you're back.
Because it's the problem.
Skulk, you're breaking up very, very badly. Yeah, so we have spoken about this many times before on the show, that it's always, always a small group of people or a false flag operation where the police themselves lure you into bad stuff and then arrest you for it. But it is a huge thing in South Africa right now. And I think, as Skulk said, it's to scare people off, because they... the laws passed in South Africa are cancelling all free speech whatsoever. Are you not?
Hello, Karen?
Yeah, you're back, Skulk. There you go, you're back. Okay, he can't hear me. Sorry about this, people, but you know.
half and half. That's what I was saying.
You're back, Skulk. Nope, he's not.
Okay, I will try now. Fourth time, Karen. I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you now, Skulk. Yep. Because they're trying to cancel all speech, free speech, I think one of the things, although we put it down to normal South African internet, I really, really do think that they're trying to keep Skulk off the air. He has been under enormous attack from all sides, from the liberals, from the far, far right, from the government, from everything. He's been under huge attack. And because they tried to shut us down, I think they're trying really hard to stop him from talking. They don't like me either, because they've said that expats must stop talking nonsense about what is going on in South Africa, because everything we say is absolute rubbish. So, Skulk, are you back?
I also, Karen, can you hear me?
Very loud and clear. Yeah, I was just saying that I really do feel that they're trying to shut you down, because you're one of the few that speaks out regularly and loudly, and they don't like it.
Yes, Karen, the campaign against me is well known by this time. You know all the intricacies. You've also seen what happened to the actual agent that was seen to come and take me out. Not literally, I presume. Not yet, anyway. He's being discredited now totally on social media. We had quite a substantial campaign against him. This evening, he went so far as to actually admit on his Facebook, on his social media, that he was working with Ben Turok, being one of the most infamous ANC cadres, ANC terrorists. He was actually working with him at some point in time. So this is where this guy is now. That other one, the Smith guy that was working against me from Cape Town, from what was that, Kraaifontein, if I remember correctly. Yes, he was particularly also coming after you. He's being taken out, not physically. Once again, we're not speaking any physical danger to him, but he's been taken out. So yes, on that front, we won. But yeah, there's always the opposition. There's always the attempts to just simply quiet Skulk down and quiet Karen down and the next one down. We will always have that. The threats against Steve Hofmeyr, for instance, came to nothing. They threatened him. They're going to take him to equality court and so forth. Nothing has happened in the meantime. They haven't come for me. I think that they are playing a different game against me, because I also don't go into the media saying silly things about black people, because it is silly in South Africa to go and be racist and be openly racist and say things on social media. So they can't go and catch me on those counts. So they are playing a much different game in my instance. It's very personal in its manifestation.
Yeah, I understand that exactly, Skulk. But they do really want to shut us down, because the guest that we have on in the next hour, when I contacted him, he said to me, and he is a staunch supporter of the South African cause, he said to me, "What is going on? I've heard nothing, absolutely nothing out of South Africa." And that alone, Skulk, is extremely scary, because the things that are going on there should be world news. They should be being screamed out across the world, and yet there's dead silence.
Yes, indeed, Karen. I can't remember the other guest also some time ago, who made the remark, and he was also a very clued up person. I can't remember who that was. Who also made the observation or the remark that you will remember it was that time of the xenophobic violence in South Africa.
Yes.
He didn't even know about those things. He heard it from our social media. And when we started to elaborate and post mainstream media, South African mainstream media, it was an eye-opener to him also that these things were going on and nobody was even aware of it. So yes, there's definitely a media blackout relating to bad news coming out of South Africa, definitely.
But the government is also trying to shut that down because, I mean, Ramaphosa has spoken out many times about the expats speaking badly about South Africa and how they must stop it.
Yes, Karen, and it definitely has the effect that they are looking for, because when Trump's new ambassador came to South Africa, Lana Marx, she was all cushy around Ramaphosa, and even saying, Trump himself even saying, but we are very satisfied with what
yes.
Ramaphosa is doing.
Yes.
Now, that it didn't come as a surprise to me, but it certainly came as a surprise to many people in South Africa who still believed wrongly that Trump is going to march in here with like a knight in shining armor and rescue. That's not going to happen. The first place that Karl Marx went on an official visit was the so-called Apartheid Museum, which is like
yes.
a Holocaust museum.
Yes.
It's this propaganda thing that they built to now tell people from outside how bad South African apartheid was, with all these lies of a million black people being killed, which we know it's not the truth. There's no things things like that.
Absolutely. But it was a shock to a huge amount of South Africans who believed that because she was South African, she would be on our side. And there's no such thing happening. No such thing.
Exactly. But you see, that's the amount of, and I'm going to call it what it is. For instance, this United Liberty Alliance, AfriForum,
yes.
many of
yes.
these so-called other organizations running and making money off this story of we have this close contact now with Trump and we are speaking directly with Trump and therefore Trump will come and save us. And they are making money off it through memberships, through grants and gifts and all these. They are making money off this. And it's a nonsensical story. And I'm not criticizing Trump. America's interest is what is on Trump's mind. So if it's not on Trump's mind to save the white South Africans, and it's not to the interest of the Americans.
No.
It will become the interest of the Americans if something strange happened here and there's a civil war all of a sudden. But at this point in time, it's not. And therefore, these people are lying. They are simply misleading the ordinary South African, white South Africans into believing that the American government is going to step in and stop this thing as also. It's not going to happen. Wake up, people. It's not going to happen. It's as simple as that.
No, but they still believe it because these people, as you say, are making money off of it and even have pictures of the White House on their send us money demands. And it makes me crazy that they're handing out false hope, absolute false hope, to the people of South Africa who are so desperate to cling on to any straw that they believe it and send the money.
Yes, you will remember AfriForum specifically. These two guys go overseas. They speak to some people through Fox News. They actually appear, I think, for 5 minutes on Fox News. Great stuff. If you can do that, I'm not criticizing you. Great stuff. But then it becomes a propaganda campaign from their side because they get pictures with one of these advisors of Trump, the guy with the bushy hair and the mustache. He was fired not very long ago. I can't remember his name. But now they're sitting with this picture of these two guys standing with this advisor to Trump, and they tell South Africans, we are speaking directly to Trump. Here's proof of it. We were standing with this guy. And it was an absolute blatant lie. I also have my own sources, also speaking to people on the other side. You know who I'm speaking about. I'm not going to divulge those people's name. And they knew this advisor. And this advisor said, no, it's not what happened. I was there for my own program on Fox News, and these two guys came to me and they said they want a picture with me, and I stood there and they took a picture. That was what happened. They did not have discussions with him. It was a simple picture being taken at the Fox News offices. Exactly. So yes, it's blatant lies. It's blatant lies. It's simple as that.
I was also at the Fox News offices last year, and I had photographs taken there, but I didn't tell the whole world that I was there on behalf of South Africa. You know, because I was shown the door when I tried to speak to people about South Africa there. I went in and I tried, but I was literally escorted out the door because they did not want to speak to me. So I could also have posted pictures and said, yay, look what I did. But it's not our job to confuse or misguide people at all. And we're coming up, we're almost in the ad break. We will be back in about 6 minutes. You're listening to Radio Free South Africa with your host, Skalk van der Merwe, and myself, Karen Smith. And as promised, we have a surprise guest for the second hour, a very good friend of mine, somebody I'm proud to call my friend. I'm honored and privileged to have him on the show. He must be known to all of you. So welcome to you, Jeff Renz.
Hello, Karen. And we have been through quite a lot, not nearly as much as you have by yourself, but I've been blessed to be able to share some of the load with you and try to bring the reality of the horrors of what's going on in South Africa. And as I told you yesterday, I haven't seen a word about South Africa and the crisis going on down there in weeks in the media. And I look at almost all the media. It's just gone. It's not there.
Yes, Skalk and I were talking about that a little while ago and saying that for all the disaster that is going on in South Africa right now, especially the load shedding that they're suffering from, there is not a word. You would think that the media worldwide would be screaming about it, but there's not a word anywhere. And so shows like ours and yours who support us so strongly are very, very important right now, because otherwise people will never know what is happening. Skalk.
I'm sorry, Karen. Say it again a little bit.
I said, if it wasn't for shows like yours that support us and ours that goes out twice a week, nobody would know anything. And so our shows are critically, and our supporters are critically important right now.
Oh, yeah, never more so. I've never seen in major media, I don't remember seeing a bigger blackout of news in my life.
Yep.
There's just no news. It's like South Africa doesn't exist, or it's a peaceful, idyllic wonderland where there's no problem. I mean, we have everything down there from outright rape, murder, and cannibalism to perhaps the most graft-ridden, corrupt criminal government on the face of the earth. It's arguable. And there's nothing going on in the news about it. Not a word. Just, it amazes me.
Skalk?
Yes, good evening, Jeff. And once again, it's such an honor and privilege to have you on our show. Thank you very much for the time that you gave us.
Oh, you're welcome, Skalk. It's good to hear your voice.
Yes, I fully agree with what Karen is saying. And remember, let's forget about South Africa and the whole context of South Africa for a moment. It's a Southern African, it's an African problem that we're dealing with here. We spoke about power supply of South Africa into all our neighboring countries. So if South Africa goes down, basically the whole subcontinent goes down. And even that is not news in the outside world. Now, how is that possible? Everybody is speaking about investment in Africa, and Africa is the future and all these things. But somehow this is not news. If the major power utility in South Africa goes down and all these neighboring states are sitting blacked out, it's impossible. For me as a South African, it's impossible to believe that we are not even that newsworthy. So there's definitely an agenda of blacking out bad news from South Africa.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. We were talking, Karen and I, just briefly yesterday, about the loss of freedom of speech in America. And that's an issue that you are tragically all too well familiar with down there. I don't know how much freedom of speech you have left at all in South Africa. We'll talk about America in a minute. But how bad is it down there now, Skull?
Well, it's as bad as through all the mechanisms, through legislation, through peer review and all these things. It's so bad that all many South Africans are literally too scared to actually say what's on their mind. Not even so-called racist things or whatever. Just simply saying what they believe to be the problem. And it many times boil back to the employment. In the first place, it's very difficult to get a job as a white person and remain in a job as a white person. And now you go onto a social media platform or wherever, and you just simply say what you think. And there's eyes and ears looking at everything that's being said. And you will find often that it goes back to the workplace, that you are being reported to your employer. Now, your employer is sitting with a problem. If he then does not go and dismiss you or take action and steps against you, then some formal type of a situation will be created for him. Or you will be slandered in the media, or there will be pressure from that side. So even on that most basic level, people are discouraged to simply say what their opinions are. So yes, formally we have freedom of speech. We have a very nice constitution, a very strong constitution guaranteeing the freedom to opinion and the freedom of expression. But in actual terms, for the man in the street, those rights doesn't pertain to anything.
Yeah, I understand. What happens with a loss of freedom of speech, and I've made this point many times over the years, people begin to be afraid to say things about certain subjects. What follows immediately, irrevocably, is that you begin to become afraid to even think about those subjects, lest that you accidentally say something about it. So freedom of speech and the loss thereof, to me, is the loss of freedom of thought as well. I think the two are inextricably connected. I think you're seeing a lot of that up here now. People just don't want to think about it. When you bring something up to someone that's uncomfortable for them, they'll often say, I don't want to even think about that. Not realizing that in truth, that's what's going on. They don't want to think about it. So loss of freedom of speech means loss of freedom of thought. That's my view.
Yes, it's true, because it's a conditioning of your mind. If you're discouraged, in the first place, discouraged to say something, later on there's a penalty to what you say, obviously your mind is going to be conditioned to a point where you're not even going to be able to think about it. That's exactly what they want. It's brainwashing on a tremendously big scale. It's brainwashing. It's conditioning of thought. So I fully agree with you on that point.
Aaron, you've seen both sides of the fence. You're up here now. Are you probably, like I am, amazed at the rapidity and the speed by which this complete reformation of American society is being done? And it is being done. Make no mistake about it. It's an agenda, and it is being enforced and implemented around the clock. I've never seen anything like it. I thought there would be some pushback from the American people, but there isn't. They're just essentially sitting, doing nothing. They will not go on the streets. They will not demonstrate about the loss of their liberties, their rights. The Constitution, both countries have excellent constitutions, but if the constitutions are ignored, what good are they? As George W. Bush said, it's just a crappy little piece of paper. They mock it. They laugh at the Constitution. They who are in power.
The powers that should not be, as I call them, Jeff, I absolutely agree with you. When I first got here, and it's going on 9 years now, it was absolutely fabulous. But in the last, I would say, 5 years, things have changed so much in this country. It is absolutely scary. People are terrified, as you say, to even think about subjects, so they don't. They sit and watch their sport.
Right.
And what really astounds me, Jeff, is what you just said. They're not taking to the streets. But you look at any big game, big sports event, and there they are in their thousands, paying literally thousands of dollars to go and see this. But they will not stand up for their rights. And it really worries me to look at the rest of the world. Look at France at the moment. It's at a standstill because everybody's on strike. Everybody's taken to the streets. Everybody is angry. And things will change because they have to. But here we sit. I nearly said something rude about where your thumbs are. But yes, we just sit here and do nothing. And it's awful. What is going on in Congress right now, the impeachment of President Trump, one would think that the entire country would be in arms about that. Especially the fact that a Schiff can get people's phone records. That to me is not what the Patriot Act was about. It is not what the NSA was meant to do. But if they can do that to the president, then what can they do to us? And we are all just sitting and doing right. Nothing.
You know, there is a lot of reason to suspect that first Europeans and now Americans are being artificially forced into a position of compliance, and
yes,
they're just not getting up off the chair.
Yes.
There's a reason for that. It has been proven, and I have the original story, that in Europe it was suggested by someone working for the government. This was a news story, that the hormone oxytocin be put into the public drinking water to calm the public down and to make them accept the invasion of sub-Saharan black Africans and Middle Eastern Muslims who have been under the destruction and death of white Western Christian civilization. To have people sit back and do next to nothing raises many questions. This particular story gave me a big answer. Put something in the water. Put something in the food. Subsequently, prove they found in dairy products, milk, cheese, ice cream, yogurt, you name it, they found extremely high levels of artificially introduced oxytocin in the dairy products, which were being sold all over Europe. That tranquilized the European populace. I think the same thing is going on here, but perhaps not using oxytocin hormone in dairy, but perhaps using the cell phone grid network to broadcast frequencies to make people compliant and non-aggressive. They have frequencies. We're electrical first. There are frequencies for every emotion that we have. That's proven. That's ancient science. They can broadcast these frequencies over cell tower communications networks, through cell phones. And, you know, then there's another funny thing. People always worry about being chipped. Well, when you look at things in, I think, a realistic fashion, people are walking around holding their chips in their hand. Those cell phones are chips. They spy on the person. They tell the person what to think. They act as communications and entertainment devices, but they're more than that. Cell phones are chips, in my view. So you've got something here that makes no sense, that Americans would turn their backs on 200-plus years of history and cultural achievement and allow themselves to be invaded. Trump has permitted 1.1 million more invaders from over 40 different countries to cross into the U.S., in fiscal year 2019. That's the official total. Just 1 year of Trump. 3 years of Trump is probably 3 million people. He has unfortunately lied and lied and lied about the U.S. border. Under the Constitution, it mandates that the President and the Congress use every power available to this country to prevent and stop the invasion of any of the states of the Union. Trump has the Constitution 1,000% behind him. to send the military to the border on his first day in office to control the invasion and stop it. He will not do it because he cannot do it. They, the international global elite, will not permit him to do it.
Yep.
End of story.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And to go back to South Africa, the same thing has happened there. We have these people, Skulk, you could confirm this, that are pouring from Zimbabwe. And the same thing is happening. So where the whites were outnumbered to start with, it is now just impossible. Yes, Skulk, do you agree?
Yes, that's a fact. And again, the strange thing here is it's not white people fighting against black immigrants coming in. It's that the black people, and specifically the Zulu people, who's actually fighting against the foreigners in South Africa. So even if we can get the news across to Europe and the United States, it's going to be difficult for them to understand what's actually going on here. Xenophobic violence. It's not white so-called new Nazis running around in the streets killing black people. It's black people killing black people. It's black people stopping black people. So it's a very strange thing that's happening here. But I wanted to take up your conversation also about the apathy of people. White people, I mean, we are being killed off in scores. We are being subjected to the most harsh racial-based laws imaginable. And we're sitting at home, and we're quite peaceful. We're not fighting back. They're at a point where they want to expropriate without compensation our land and our belongings and everything. And yes, people go on to social media, and they have a lot to say about it, that there's no actual pushback. Now, how could that be? If it was two or three generations back, if it was 100 years back, there would have been a civil war long ago, and I don't want a civil war. I'm a person that has always been against a civil war or wars for that matter. I'm just saying, stating the fact, there would have been a war long ago to stop these things, but nothing, literally nothing is happening from our side. And that's scary. That tells me there's definitely something very wrong with this whole scenario.
We have another problem, and it's, I think, most appropriately summed up by renaming our culture the culture of the lie. We, the American people, are so used to being lied to now by our political leaders, by our businessmen, by merchants, salesmen, by our friends. We are growing up in a culture of lies. And what happens when someone gets lied to a lot? They begin to lie in return. They see there's no accountability, and that's another watchword of our culture,
yeah.
No accountability. So they lie, or they become victims. It's not my fault. He did it, or they did it, or she did it to me. It's not my fault. And they lie constantly. There's a story on CNN today about Trump. They're nothing but stories about Trump. There's an editorial on CNN. Let me see if I can find it here in a minute, and I'll read it a little bit to you. It talks about the issue of lying and how it's constant. Karen, you see this all the time. When we were kids, if we told a little, what we used to call a little white lie, we actually felt bad about it. People now, they don't care. They tell the big lie. In some ways, the bigger the lie, the easier it is for other people to believe it. So we have a problem here. Our morality has been taken down by the international communist movement that has come into this country and taken almost complete charge of it. You can call it Zionism, international bankers, globalists, the cartel, whatever you want to call it. It is international Bolshevik communism, Marxism. That's what's taking over the Western world. It was in the FDR administration in spades. There were all kinds of communists under FDR, followed through Truman. Senator Joseph McCarthy tried to expose it in the early 1950s, and they probably killed McCarthy. We think he was assassinated. It's still here, and now it's worse than ever. That's part of the big problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Because everything you read in the papers, here on the TV, here out of politicians' mouths, is a lie. And you know what is so scary? We talked about how quickly it's happening. Nowadays, they don't even try and hide it. They just lie blatantly about everything. And when they're found out and exposed, nothing happens. They don't care. They just tell another lie to cover up that lie. It is unbelievable to me. And in South Africa, the politicians, they wouldn't know truth if it bit them in the bum. Skalk, do you agree?
Yeah, we have the so-called Zondo Commission. Now, what happened was that after Zuma was deposed and Ramaphosa came to power, Ramaphosa had a lot to say about how he's going to counter corruption now in South Africa. Now, remember, we're not speaking small-time corruption. We're speaking of billions, maybe trillions of rands that have been stolen and corrupted and went missing and siphoned off. It's not small-scale stuff. It's huge. It's so big that it's called state capture. Literally, where crime families captured the mechanisms of state. It's formally recognized. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's a formal recognized situation that we have in South Africa. Now, okay. So after Ramaphosa came to power, he then established the so-called Zondo Commission, headed up by a former judge, Zondo. And Zondo is now investigating all this bad things that happened and all the corruption and all these things. And through formal legal process. This is not people sitting around the bush and speaking things. It's formal legal process. We now know of most of the corruption that place. Bosasa is one of the companies that scored big time. I mean, the corruption there is, it's ludicrous, the things that happened there. The Gupta family, being an Indian family, it's ludicrous how they simply took everything and they ransacked everything and everything. Names of most of the politicians, the higher politicians in the ANC is being called out. There are even names of some of the opposition politicians. And up to tonight, not one single person has been arrested or charged criminally through the Zondo Commission. So we know they've stolen trillions of rands through corruption in South Africa. They've basically bankrupted the state, but nobody is persecuted, prosecuted criminally.
Accountable, which is what Jeff was saying. Accountability is out the window. It doesn't exist anymore.
So in other words, the bigger the lie, that is what you're also saying, the bigger the lie, the more impossible it becomes to prosecute a person. But then small little things, like this lady who said the baboons are sitting on the beach, she's prosecuted. And Vicky Momberg that goes into Iran because she was hijacked and then the police wouldn't assist her. She goes into the street and she says the infamous K word, which is basically the same as your N word, and she's been prosecuted and things like that. But the big guys stealing trillions of rands and actually killing their own people, literally killing their own people through this, nothing happened to them. Now, if that is where we are now, we must readjust our own minds to accept that we will have to tackle these guys in a whole different way. Law is certainly not the order of the day anymore. Then we must think beyond law. What are we going to do beyond the legal state, the legal mechanisms to bring people to consequence?
All right, here's that story. It's very interesting. It's an editorial on CNN, and the title is Trump, let me pull this up a little higher. Trump desperately using lies, distortions to fight impeachment. And it reads, on Capitol Hill, the case for impeaching Donald Trump has sharpened into a clear picture of abuse of power.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, at the Justice Department, the Inspector General demolished a conspiracy theory Trump has cited to justify his efforts to destroy public confidence in American national security agencies. But if you expect the president and his backers to turn off the fog and lying machines and distortions, don't. Up is down, black is white. The American people are being told, despite the evidence, that the FBI is crooked and the House Democrats are only interested in undoing the 2016 election. In Trump alone, the GOP must trust. He goes on and on about, cites a number of things that are lies. The point is, it's not just Trump. They're all liars. It doesn't matter. We can't play the label game. Left, right, center, Democrat, it doesn't matter. Republicans, they're all capable of equal amounts of corruption and criminality. All of them. When they get around money, morality goes out the window. It's gone.
Well, that's exactly what Skulk was talking about, is that these uneducated, and really it is the truth, they are uneducated. Ramaphosa maybe not, but the rest of them are really uneducated, stupid people who should not be in control of anything.
Right.
However, they got into power, brought all their buddies in with them, as Skulk was talking about cadre deployment, bring all their buddies because they're behind the ANC, rob the country blind, lie through their teeth, and nothing happens. So they all lie. We also spoke about that earlier on, how the lies of the other groups who are supposedly opposing the government, they lie just as much to put money in their own pockets. And now when the country is bankrupt, as America just about is, I mean, our debt is enormous. So, and as is South Africa's, when we can't pay the debt, those people will just go to their bunkers, their hidey holes, and they'll be fine. And the rest of us will pay the price.
No, exactly. I don't, honestly, Karen and Skulk, see any ways to remediate this.
No.
I don't see any way to reverse course. I just don't see it. I think that whatever is being used to subdue the American public and populace and disenfranchise it from any real honest intellectual pursuit of patriotism is an unqualified success. Sorry to say it, but the vast majority of Americans don't want to be bothered. They just don't. It's just an inarguable situation. And here we are now with the stress holidays, and that's a fact. Americans are stressed out. Most Americans are still paying off last holiday's debts. Think about that. And now they're going to go into debt for this Christmas season.
Yep. Well, you know, at least they have that opportunity. They can put themselves into debt and they can have a Christmas.
Right.
But if you think about the people in South Africa, you know, it is horrific. And Skulk, I wanted you to talk about the mines closing down and the other companies leaving, because Ramaphosa is doing tours all over the place and saying, you know, South Africa's open for business. Yeah, with no electricity, no water, no whites to work for you. But Skulk, that is one of the biggest disasters still going to strike South Africa, is all the businesses closing down. Thousands more, if not tens of thousands, are going to be on the street soon.
Do you have to take a break at the bottom of the hour, Karen?
No, we don't.
All right, here's something that might be worth doing. Let me pull this up here. There's a story I have up. Well, I put it up many years ago, then I revised it a couple of years ago. It's entitled 22 Key Goals of Zionist Communism in America. Have already been accomplished. This was taken from the 1993 Congressional Record. Read into the Congressional Record, representative named Furlong of Florida, in the House of Representatives, January 10, 1963, he read into the record the goals of the Communist Party. I pulled 22 of them out. See, let me read these and see if, Karen, if you or Skulk, you can draw with South Africa and what you've seen here in the U.S., Karen, since you've been here. All right, number one. do away with all loyalty votes. Number two, get control of schools. Communist propaganda. Control of teachers' associations. Put the court line in textbooks. Number three, gain control of all student newspapers. Number four, use student riots to foment public protests against programs or organizations which are under communist attack. Infiltrate the press. Get control of the interview assignments, editorial rates, policy-making decisions, and news. Number six, gain control of heat.
Number 22, create the impression that violence and insurrection
are legitimate aspects of the American tradition that students and special interest groups like Antifa should rise up and use united force to solve economic, political, and social problems. This is exactly what's going on in this country. Karen?
In all countries, though, Jeff.
It's
not just here. It's everywhere.
That's right.
And if people had listened to us 20 years ago with the story breaking in South Africa, they might have had some perspective on what is going on in their own country. But nobody was allowed to talk about it. It was carried out in South Africa very, very well. And so it spread everywhere else, which was the original plan, because South Africa was the blueprint for this. And now I believe that we are lost, because how do we fight back now? How do we turn it around now? Our kids have been indoctrinated for, 40 years, more than that? 1963 was that that was read into Congress. Our kids are indoctrinated. They believe that communism and socialism is a good thing. We've had it. I think patriotism is now a crime, because the biggest danger in America to America is white nationalists. So what now? Really, where do we go from here? We are done for.
Looks like it. I hate to say it, because I'm not a defeatist.
No.
We're not going to stop, but the overwhelming force of this change can't be denied.
Skulk? I think Skulk's gone again. Yep.
All right.
He's not allowed to talk.
They don't like me. This has happened to us before.
Yes. Well, just about every time recently that we've had Skulk on, he disappears. He will try and come back. But yes, it is frightening that in 1963, those were read into Congress. Do you think that Congress does anything at all for the people or by the people or anything? No, it is not. But what is the end game, Jeff, for all of that? Socialism does not work. So they want to get rid of us because white creative thinking people are standing in the way of their objectives. But then they're left with a bunch of savages. So then what?
Right. That's right.
I don't...
You know, when you say, all right, when you say savages, that's an understatement. Many of the invaders coming in here are medieval, Stone Age, and worse. The Muslim religion, if you can call it that, in all intellectual honesty, it's a sex and death cult, is all it is, created by representatives of the Catholic Church. It's well known if it's studied. The prime directive that they have is our death, our execution, the overthrow and destruction of America and Europe. Europe is largely, tragically, gone now.
Yeah, it's gone. It's gone.
You know a great deal about that. The other issue here is we have in Minneapolis alone over 125,000 Stone Age Somalis in one city. How did they get there? People don't even bother to ask that question. They were brought here under the so-called United Nations Refugee Resettlement Program, fully supported by President Donald Trump and the State Department. It started under Obama. Trump could stop it anytime he wants. He doesn't want to. He doesn't want to die, because there are ways to take care of presidents who don't do what they're told.
Exactly. Exactly. I see Skulk is back. Skulk, have you been able to hear the things that Jeff has been saying, and what is your comment?
Yes, Karen, I indeed heard. I think about 90%. I was just offline for about a minute or two. I heard everything. Yes, And it also goes down, there's a list that was actually drawn up, if I remember correctly, by Lenin himself, which basically is the same of what Jeff has outlined now. And yours was by the American Communist Party in 1963. So in other words, that same program is the internationalist program also. It's not only the United States. It's the Leninist, communist, in other words, Bolshevik program for the world. So yes, and we can see all those things that Jeff outlined is exactly the same things that's being played out in South Africa as we speak. So yes, it's very clear. Once again, I always come back to this. It's not incidental that these things are happening. It's by program and by design. It's not a conspiracy. There you can go to the actual records, 1963, and you can go and read it for yourself. And you must be blind and dumb if you cannot see what is going on. It's by design. South Africa, the fall of the South African economy is by design. People don't understand that. They want Ramaphosa to fix it. Ramaphosa is not here to fix it. He's here to run it even further into the ground so that there's an economic collapse in South Africa.
Yep, absolutely, Skalk. And this is the problem, because we, the people, have no power whatsoever to change things. I mean, yes, they're rioting in the streets in France, but what is it going to change at the end of the day? The powers that should not be, and there are very few of them, are in control, and we just let them do it. We have not stood up since 1963 and said, excuse me, what the hell is this? We're not doing anything about it, and we are still not doing anything about it. And before we know it, we will be serfs.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
Yes, and if I may comment on the issue of France and the Yellow Vest and all these guys and the so-called uprising of the people that's going there. It's not the uprising of the people. It's part of this whole issue, this whole Hegelian thing of you create a crisis and then you present the solution of the crisis. Those rioters are not left-wing, they are not right-wing, they are not conservative, they are not liberal. They themselves don't even know what they are rioting about. If you go to South Africa, these big riots that we have here, and you speak to people about why they are rioting, they don't know. They just simply go to the street because this issue or that issue or the following. So, yes, it seems as if France is now totally destabilized, et cetera, et cetera. What happened last time with the big riots of the Yellow Vest people? European soldiers, blue helmets, were sent in. In other words, not French soldiers, international soldiers were sent out to quell this big revolution now and this big rebellion. So in other words, they are just simply, I think, rehearsing of what will happen in the future. We are going to see big riots. In the United States, you're going to see tremendously big riots that will be quelled by international forces, by blue helmets or whatever you could call them in the future. In South Africa, this is what's actually going down in South Africa, that we will reach a stage where there will be a civil war in South Africa and it will be quelled by international forces. So it's all part of this big design of, yeah, basically undermining state and nation and race and family and all these things so that they can take total control of the situation.
Exactly. All right, Karen, so... here in the States, we pretty well see what's coming. It's not hard to see. Skalk, I would ask you, what is coming to South Africa? How soon will the violence begin in earnest, the death, the destruction, and the rest of it? What's holding it back? We felt, and I think you even said it, that it could happen at almost any time. And I guess that's still the status down there. What's going on?
I think it's just different personal interests, not political interests and not big political, big job political interests. It's personal interest of people that's basically keeping this whole pot under a lid. And I'm going to explain to you why I say this. Karen, you will also know during the so-called xenophobic attack, which was basically Zulu people attacking the foreigners, the whole thing was quelled within days by whom? The Zulu king. Because the Zulu king is integrally part of this whole thing. He's on the payment sheet of the government anyway. We know that. It's not a conspiracy. We know he gets salary from the state. So it's personal interest, I think, that's basically keeping this thing under control. If that personal interest is taken away or it lapses to a certain side, you're going to see tremendously big violence in South Africa. We must also say something else to one another. The black population in South Africa is also very apathetic. So they are also being controlled. It's not as if they are running around in the streets like wild zombies at this point in time. But yes, that can change overnight. But it's once again, I think it boils down to personal interest at this point in time. It's not in the interest of these people looting the state to have the mass violence that we can expect yet. And that is what Malema said. He said, white people, we will not genocide you yet. So it is coming. We know it's coming. When is it coming? Everybody's predicting 5 months down the line, 6 months, a year, whatever. I think within the loop of 5 years, a little bit longer than people predict, it's going to manifest. It's going to come to a certain crisis point where it's definitely going to erupt, but it will be controlled. But I think it's going to be within a loop of 3 to 5 years at the next election cycle, basically, in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, Karen, how much time do we have here? In my humble projection, I see the next 11 months will be utterly chaotic, which is what the controllers want. They want Americans divided. They want hate. And everywhere you look now, you see and hear hate, hate, hate from the left against the right,
yep.
Right against the left.
Yes,
hate, hate.
Yes.
That's our new cultural bedrock here. What's coming is the collapse of fiat currency and its replacement by digital currency. All blockchain driven. Just like Bitcoin, same thing. It's all going to be crypto. That's coming. Artificial intelligence,
uh-huh.
AI, within the next 3, 4, maybe 5 years, I think 3 years, will become the dominant level of intelligence on planet. We will be number 2. And then thereafter, our numbers of 8 billion, I think it's more than 7.5, will be decreased as the Georgia Guidestones in the by 75 to 80% or more. They're going to wipe out most of humankind. The remainder will be a slave, servant, serf class. This is all going to be run by AI. And the people running AI will think that they're in control until one day they wake up and they find out that they are no longer controlling the AI. The AI is controlling them. That's my view.
Skulk, this is yours. Absolutely. You say the same thing.
Does he?
Yes, artificial intelligence. We speak often about this whole thing. My daughters are sitting around me as I'm doing this radio program, and we discussed the issues of artificial intelligence every single day to say that we will reach a point, and we're reaching that point very quickly, where we will just be part of this whole Borg. If you remember the Star Trek movie, the Borg, that big thing floating through the sky and everybody is part of it, that is basically where we're going. And yes, people are going to be people in the physical carbon-based, water-based form that we are now is going to become obsolete. Why have a person? Why have a personality or physical being called a human? It's basically, why would you have it? So yes, we will get to the point. Georgia Guidestones or not, that is what I can see in the rise of technology, in the rise of cyborgs. If we can transplant, it's going to be two-faced, I think. Transplant the literal brain of a person and the body parts of a person into a cyborg system. basically a robot, nothing else but that. That's going to be the first thing. But the second phase is going to be where you take the consciousness out of the brain, out of the mind of a person, and put that on the chip, and simply make it part of a big ball.
That's right.
Gentlemen, we have 4 minutes left. I think we need to
do I
think we should have a program totally about the artificial intelligence at some stage, because we could talk for hours about it. And I do agree with both of you that that is definitely, definitely coming, because if you look at stories about how they have got human brains and how they now have permission to make cross human beings with animals and all kinds of things like that. It is coming our way, and it is coming fast. And I think 5G is very much part of that.
Of course it is. And then 6G is coming next. 5G will be not the final stage. 6G is already on. They already have it. They're just going to have to wait a year or two, and then they'll begin to implement that.
And it's going to wipe us out, because it's been proven that it kills everything.
Right. Just remember, the cell phone, smartphone, is the chip. People are simply carrying it around. It's not injected into them. They pay their bills with it. They're tracked with it. They're listened to with it. They're watched with it. They're told essentially what to do with all the video prompts that they're given. It's a chip. You got to look at it like it's a chip, and things become more clear. All of you listening who have smartphones, I'm not saying you're not in control of your lives. I'm just saying be aware of the danger that you're holding in your left or right hand.
And we're giving them to children younger and younger and younger.
Right. 6-7-year-old kids get these things and they're gone.
Yep.
Gone.
Absolutely. Well, we have at this stage about 2 minutes left, I think. So some closing thoughts, Jeff?
I just would like to urge everyone to stop by rents.com. We try to present reality. We cover it all. We criticize all paradigms, left, right, center, it doesn't matter. We try to tell it like it is. That's not easy to do now, because reality is essentially a construct of the controllers. What is reality? Ultimately, I think we're all born with an inner clock of guidance that is almost immediately beset upon with vaccines and programming and television and all the rest of it, and destroyed, if not disabled. We've got to reconnect with that somehow. I think if you take people and isolate them, put them in a room, give them a situation to consider, they'll usually come up with an inherently moral decision, a good decision. But if they're in a group, or they're exposed to the media constantly, and they're not given any chance to be with themselves, they're lost. When you are alone and away from your smartphone, you are thinking. When you are with your smartphone and your screen and your contemporaries, you are reacting. That's it.
1 minute, Skull. In fact, half a minute. Jeff, I'd like to.
Yes, no, we've covered so many things tonight. Everything, right? Yeah, yes. But we covered so many things, and it's all these things. I think we've been bombarded, I think, with all these things in our heads. People are not even supposed to have all these worries in their lives. But once again, it's leading to a point where we will be given a choice, and we will be given a solution. And it's all part of this game that they are playing with us.
Jeff, I'd like to thank you very, very much for giving us this time, because I know you can't spare the time. Thank you so much. And thank you, Skull. We'll be back same time, same place next week. Thank you for listening. Mm-hmm.